statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
All right, thank you for joining me tonight for another edition of Mysterious Radio. I am your host, K-Town, and tonight we're going to be talking about UFOs and aliens, but this time it's USOs. It's underwater UFOs, okay? We haven't talked about that very much, and I do have a special guest, Preston Dennett, who does lecture on these all over the world. Preston has wrote a ton of books about these UFOs and USOs, and he also writes about strange creatures, which I will definitely have him back on the show to discuss that at a later time. But tonight we're going to be talking about reports. Preston has been gathering them for years and is going to be sharing those with us tonight. You can also get Preston's books from Amazon. All right, my special guest tonight is author and UFO researcher Preston Dennett, and he's going to be discussing some history into UFOs and sightings, but more specifically UFO bases that are believed to be underwater. Preston has written a book called Undersea UFO Base, and that book is available for you on Amazon. Preston, you are a first-time guest, and I want to thank you very much for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio.
Hey, I'm honored to be here. Thanks very much.
Now, Preston, I saw your books. I really love the things that you write about. Some of the things are different, different aspects of the weird and strange, but by far most of them are about the alien phenomena. So tell us, what's your motivation for writing so many books about it?
Basically, it's because I was blindsided by this phenomena. I was very skeptical growing up. I thought my family was. It turns out some of them were keeping secrets from me. They had encounters, really profound ones. I was actually back in 1986. I was a young man, 21 years old. I heard a report on the news about this sighting over Alaska. Really great sighting, actually. It's pretty well known now within the UFO field. There was radar returns, several witnesses. A UFO followed this Japanese commercial jet for about 100 miles or so, or over an hour. Great sighting, but they just kind of laughed about it on the news. It was very tongue-in-cheek, and they moved on. But I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, gosh, this pilot is putting his reputation on the line. And I remembered that my brother, years ago, had said he'd seen a UFO. And so I sought him out, and I'm like, Marco, tell me about that UFO sighting you had. And he's like, oh, now you want to hear it, huh? So I'm like, yeah, just tell me. And it was an amazing sighting. He had followed this UFO, chased it in his car. He had his two friends with him, Greg and Phil. I ended up talking to both of them because I couldn't believe what Marco was telling me. I mean, he said it was a solid object, colored lights on it. It was darting around. It was totally silent. And I'm like, wow, I just didn't know what to make of it. So I started asking everyone I knew. And boy, did I get a shock. I found out my sister-in-law had seen a UFO over Van Nuys Air Force Reserve Base. She had two witnesses with her. I ended up speaking to them. She later had an encounter with an apparent gray-type ET. My other sister-in-law, she told me about bedroom visitations that she had had as a child with these short humanoids. I had a friend who had missing time. I brought it up at work. This lady I worked with, I'll call her Diane, because she ended up having really extensive experiences that she didn't want her name used. But she's like, UFOs? Yeah, me and my whole family saw one. It was darting around. It was staying still, then it would hover and turn at right angles. And she's explaining the story when in walks Dorothy, another lady I'd worked with for years and years, and I knew she wasn't lying. She's like, UFOs? Oh, one followed me home from the library, followed me and my mom. She turns to me, she says, Preston, it's the weirdest thing. We live 5 minutes from the library. Somehow it took us over an hour. We didn't get home till 10:15, and I know we left at 9 p.m. Something happened to the time. And I'm like, wow. You know, the Bud Hopkins' book, Missing Time, had literally come out, you know, not much before that. It hadn't become a bestseller yet. So she didn't know about, you know, the missing time aspect of UFOs. And so here's all these people I know coming out of the closet as UFO abductees or, you know, experiencers. And I was just out of my mind. I couldn't believe it. I ended up going to the library, getting all the books I could, going to the bookstore. I subscribed to magazines. I joined UFO groups. I was started interviewing people formally, going to conventions. I needed to find out what was going on here. I felt scandalized. It was not good news.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can tell that you're very driven. And before we get in your book, though, Preston, I want to ask you this. Now, I know that you have been keeping up with the latest media coverage on the UFO sightings. And I'm pretty sure it started last year in December thereabouts with the major news networks running a story about the Navy pilot that saw a UFO while on a training mission. The story came out of nowhere, and it wasn't the usual mockery that followed if such a story ever ran in the past. Right. You know, the joking and the laughing about. But this had the smell of seriousness. The video alone takes it to a whole new level. This was from the Department of Defense. Now the media has also, this is not the only one. Now, this has been reported in recent months. So I want to ask you, why do you think they are releasing this information, and where do you see it going?
It's a difficult question to answer. This subject, you know, there's a cover-up. It's demonstrable. We can prove it through the Freedom of Information Act, the documents that have been released that are mostly redacted. It's very difficult to say. I think one of the main reasons that it's coming out is because there's an enormous amount of pressure, not only from, you know, UFO witnesses and the UFO community, but just at large. This subject is very serious. I think it's something that our government takes extremely seriously at very high levels. And there's been no movement toward in an official capacity. I mean, they've, in terms of getting anything out of the government saying anything about UFOs, nothing for years and years and years. So I'm super excited about it. I'm not exactly sure what caused this. I know the story behind it a little bit in terms of Tom DeLong of Blink 182. He apparently had an encounter and is decided to use his money and influence to sort of push this disclosure movement forward. And so it appears that he's partly responsible.
I saw that, actually. I when I read the CNN article, it did mention Tom DeLong and that he was one of the ones responsible for releasing that video. And I'm assuming he did it in collaboration with whoever he's working with in the Pentagon there. I'm not sure, but they did mention his name, and I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I was actually really pleased. There's been a number of musicians who've come forward saying they've had encounters. But it's really nice to see someone, you know, using their influence to sort of push the subject forward.
Right.
Because we've been in a traffic jam. And yeah, I mean, this was big news. I've interviewed pilots myself, people within the military. I've seen far superior videos, by the way, than what they showed there. But the way they put it together and the media blitz that they, you know, put forth, really, I think, is big news. And it made it all the way to, I don't know if you saw this, but into a White House briefing. One of the reporters asked Sarah Sanders about this. And as soon as he brought it up, first reaction, everyone kind of chuckled nervously and UFOs, ha ha ha. So when I heard that, I'm like, gosh, we're still not there yet. Because we have to start taking the subject seriously, or we're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
But yeah, it's great news, I think. It's my understanding there's more down the pipeline, not only with witnesses and videos, but possibly artifacts. I can't verify that. I'm not really in the loop on it, of course, but I'm excited about it, and I'm really interested to see where it goes. But at the same time, I have to tell you, I'm a little leery, because it's sort of like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. They've got the flying saucers. They've got the alien bodies. There's enough evidence, physical evidence, to instantly end this cover-up immediately, and they're not doing it. So it feels like it's being very tightly controlled and that there's an agenda behind it. And I'm a little worried about it. But, you know, movement is movement. And, hey, that's more than we've had in years.
Right. We'll take it. All right. Now, underwater bases are one of the more fascinating aspects to me of the alien phenomena. Now, and I'm sure it is for many others. So why don't you start off by telling us, what is a USO?
Yeah, a USO is basically a UFO that has gone underwater. You can't really call it an unidentified flying object anymore because it's not flying. So USO is an unidentified submerged object, and it's basically the same thing. These objects apparently have the ability to travel underwater in pretty much the same manner that they do in the air. And by that I mean, you know, thousands of miles per hour, very fast, turning at right angles. I'm guessing they're pushing the water away with some sort of force field, because it doesn't appear that there's any resistance. And these objects, you know, come into the water without a splash, and they're flying out without, you know, any, they're doing things we can't do. So I don't feel like there's been a lot of attention paid to this subject. Everyone's talked about UFOs, but not a lot about what's going on beneath our oceans. So I'm really excited, you know, to have the opportunity to look into this and research it more deeply.
Oh, absolutely. And one of my favorite researchers is Timothy Good. Now, I did hear him talk about it extensively. I do have some of his books as well. And then I came upon your lecture, and I wanted to ask you, and I don't remember hearing this, but I want my listeners to know that this has been going on for a while. I mean, these reports have been go back for years. So I want you to tell us when this underwater activity became more prevalent and noticeable to the public.
Right. Well, I mean, like UFOs, we know they've been around for thousands of years. I mean, we know this because of cave paintings and hieroglyphics and artifacts and Renaissance paintings that show UFOs and so on. And I think that's true for USOs as well. Some of the earliest reports, I mean, there was a report from Columbus, you know, that little convoy that went to sail to America. They had a remarkable USO sighting. So we know it goes back really far. But in terms of anyone paying any attention to it really at all, or any large numbers of accounts, it coincides pretty much exactly with the modern age of UFOs.
Okay, I want to ask you this real quick before we go a little bit too far, because I'm interested in that sighting. Give us some detail about that sighting, Preston, and how did you find it, or how was that known? Was that written down somewhere? Tell us how we discovered that sighting.
The Columbus sighting?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I don't know a whole lot about it. Only peripherally I've read about it. It apparently came from their logbook. The people on the ships saw this thing come up out of the water, and they couldn't identify it. Obviously, there were no planes back then. Back then, the idea of extraterrestrials was not really in the public consciousness. And so when people saw stuff like that, they tended to give it a perhaps astronomical interpretation or a religious interpretation, but they just called it unexplained. They did not know what it was. It was a bright orange light, I believe, pretty large, made no sound, and was pretty close. So, and they recorded it in their logbook, and it's a remarkable early sighting. There's not a lot of early sightings. Charles Fort, he wrote this series of books called The Books of the Damned, and he was one of the first honest to God paranormal investigators to really look into a wide variety of paranormal events. And he did uncover several early USO reports. Probably the earliest researcher to look into this in terms of, you know, specifics would be Ivan T. Sanderson. He wrote a book called Invisible Residents, which had a section on underwater UFOs. But other than that, almost nothing has been written about this until, you know, recently. There is a guy, Carl Feint. He's a specialist in this subject. He runs a website called Water UFO, and he's researched this subject. He's written a book about it, but it's not gotten a lot of attention. And yeah, that Columbus sighting is a great one. It's one of the early ones. I think it may be the earliest in terms of USOs. I'd have to, you know, verify that, but it's definitely one of the early ones.
Okay. Can you tell us or give us some examples of some of the best known cases?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's so many. My book focuses mostly, not exclusively, but mostly on this one stretch of coastline off the Southern California coast. You know, it's about a couple hundred miles long, right between Catalina Island and the mainland, stretching north to, say, Santa Barbara, south to, you know, past Long Beach, Palos Verdes, all the way down to Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach, San Clemente, you know, nearly halfway to San Diego. And I've got to tell you, mile for mile, this is probably one of the most active areas on our planet. So I've documented about 70 UFO sightings. By that, I mean sightings over the water that I couldn't link directly to a USO sighting, but 70 additional bona fide USO sightings where these objects are coming in and out of the water. A really great one, an early one. I mean, I could, I've got so many, K-Town. I have so many, so it's hard for me to, pick.
But what's your, and I totally understand that. I appreciate that, actually. Give me one of your favorite ones that comes to mind.
All right. I'll give you a couple of my favorite early ones.
Okay.
Like in 1954, the steamship Aliki, a Japanese steamship, was off the coast of Long Beach, right in this area, when they saw what they initially thought was a fireball come down out of the sky and crash into the water. And to their shock, this fireball came back up out of the water after being completely submerged, by the way, comes back up and flies off into outer space. It's a short sighting, but I like it because it's well verified and it's of a type that's pretty rare. It's not terribly uncommon for, in terms of USOs, to see an object go into the water. It's much rarer to see one coming out, but to see one going in and then out, only a handful of cases like that. So it's a brief case, but really impressive. Probably my favorite of all of them, well, so hard to say, but this other one in 1956, 2 years later, a couple of miles to the, well, actually it's right in that area, Redondo Beach, which is, you know, neighboring. This was around dusk, 1956, when a group of people on the beach saw this orange disc, maybe 20 feet across, come gliding, this is how they described it, gliding down out of the sky and setting softly on the water, maybe 100 yards out, you know, not very far. And a bunch of people see it, lifeguards start gathering, and this thing's just floating there, and then it slowly sinks down. It's creating all these bubbles, all this foam. They can still see the light after it sinks. By this time, there's like 20 people there. There's a police officers from two neighboring counties, Hermosa Beach and Redondo Beach, lifeguards, a night watchman, and a bunch of residents and, you know, people on the beach, all watching this thing just floating there. So what happens is two of the lifeguards get a boat, a tiny little boat, and they go out there and they're right above it. They can see this thing right below them. It's, you know, pretty deep there. It's big. It's bigger than their little boat. You know, it's 20 feet across, they're estimating, bright. And it sinks down and disappears. And the next morning, the Navy sends down some divers to look for it. And they bring Geiger counters, you know, to test for radiation. Didn't find anything. Couldn't find any radiation. But finally came back up and said, you know, released an explanation. And they put on display this light buoy, a buoy with a light on it. It's about a foot across. I've got a picture of it in the book. And they said, this is what people saw. Now, they were immediately attacked by UFO investigators, not attacked, but, you know, criticized for this obviously ludicrous explanation, which flies in the face of what everyone described. But nope, they stuck to their story and they said, this is what people saw. So immediately, you know, these things are being covered up and have been for years and years. But it's a great sighting. It got into the mainstream news. Couldn't really be completely covered up. You know, I have to tell you, of the 70 sightings of USOs there, I'm guessing that's just the tip of the iceberg. And the reason I say that is because in my research, I always ask people, well, did you report your sighting to any official capacity? Did you call the police? Did you call MUFON, the National UFO Reporting Center? Did you tell anybody? And almost nobody does. One in 10, maybe one in 100, probably closer. I've had maybe four or five people out of, you know, officially report their sightings. Not a lot. So, you know, when I say 70 sightings, you could probably times that by 10 or 100. So it's a lot more common, I think, than even within the UFO community, people realize. And those are a couple of the early ones, but like I said, I've got so many. Oh, my God.
I can imagine. I want to talk to you specifically, you know, if you can tell me, because I did see this in your book, Preston, about the sightings that are coming from the area of Catalina Island. Can you tell us about some of those?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Catalina Island, 26 miles out to sea, beautiful place. I've been there a number of times. And it's the best viewing place, I think. And I've got an enormous number of sightings coming from that area. I'm guessing if there's a base, it's pretty close to there. I've had some, you know, people tell me that that's where they believe it is. Some good sightings in the Catalina area. Well, there's one guy who is boating to Catalina. He's on his way there. He gets there. It's nighttime, and he's overshot his destination. So he's traveling along the coast, trying to get to the harbor there. When suddenly the water beneath him lights up. Like he said, it was like a swimming pool, just lit up like a swimming pool. It was this giant, giant light, square-shaped, several times larger than his boat, and very bright, and completely shocked him. I've had a number of people use that same description, saying it lit up like a swimming pool, finally just blinked off. It's really interesting. There are a number of cases where it appears that boaters are targeted. And the USO doesn't appear until it's like directly under them, or as soon as they see it, it comes right for their boat. So there's a number of sightings on Catalina Island. One of the most amazing, it's a rather long sighting, so I'll shorten it a little bit, because I could spend an hour on just this one sighting. But it involved this group of Boy Scouts. And I've got five cases involving Boy Scouts, separate cases, on Catalina Island alone. You know, it's a popular Boy Scout location. And this is one of the best sightings, and it's relatively recent. I believe it was like 2016, end of June. And there was a group of Boy Scouts camping at Parsons Cove on the north end of the island, facing the mainland. And I interviewed this 15-year-old teenager named Alan. He's the main witness. Other witnesses have refused to be interviewed at this point. I'm still trying. But he described this incredible encounter. It began after, you know, it was around 9 o'clock. They had just eaten, gone in their tents. They're set up in their sleeping bags. They're getting ready to go to bed. There had been a thick fog bank, which rolled in really fast, and then it rolled out. It was very strange. That's something that occurs in a number of cases, these weird fogs. And now it's sparkling clear skies. There's stars out, and there's these three giant lights really low in the sky. And Alan and his two friends, who are, you know, in the same tent, are looking at him thinking, gosh, those aren't planets, are they? You know, they're too bright. And gosh, that one looks red almost. And it started to jiggle and kind of move a little bit. And then it flared up, and he says that about 10 or 20 objects appeared near it as almost like a wormhole or something, or he wasn't exactly sure how they appeared, but they were just there. 20 or so objects start darting around one after another. They were all these little tiny things, initially, but he started to see more waves of sightings. Following this, every couple of minutes, these lights would flare up and more objects would come out. And so they started counting them. And this went on for about 2 hours. And by the time it was, you know, finished, they had counted at least 200 objects, which I know sounds like a lot, but there's a number of cases like that in this area, which is really unusual. And one of the data points, I think, pointing towards the possibility of an undersea base, because where are all these objects coming from? But at any rate, he saw these, you know, saucer-shaped objects, U-shaped, cylindrical-shaped, diamond-shaped. There was like manta ray-shaped, rectangular-shaped, really big ones, really tiny ones. Some had were just white lights. Others had colored lights on them, purple, green, orange, red, yellow, really beautiful. Most of them were, you know, pretty far away, maybe a mile or so, up to a half mile. Some came really close at some point, and he could see the detail really good. He could see that they're definitely not planes or helicopters, totally silent. There was a little dome on top of some of these things, and they said it was like a display, like a show being put on almost for their benefit. And they didn't, you know, jump up and start screaming like, you know, you'd think they would have. But that's another thing that you see in cases like this. People are mysteriously sedated in a way. They don't react quite the way they'd think they would. And so they're just sitting there in their tents, just out of their minds, watching this go on and on. They found out later, a lot of people were watching this. Some people had cell phones, of course, and tried to take pictures. And in every case, and this happens in other cases in this area and elsewhere, in every case, the cell phone drained. They could not take pictures. Very mysterious. I think that's not a coincidence. If it was just one, I'd say, okay, but I already know about this phenomena. These UFOs, I'm speculating here, I think exert some sort of a field around them or intentionally, you know, disable these cameras to prevent people from taking pictures.
Right.
In a lot of cases. So it's an amazing case. It went on for quite some time. I did get some verification of it. You know, there was sightings around that time in other areas nearby. And another weird detail. Oh, this is so weird. They were looking at the mainland, you know, which from their viewpoint is actually more than 26 miles. It's, you know, where they were looking, like closer to 40. And they could see the cars on the Pacific Coast Highway. They could see the houses. They actually could see this one lifeguard tower, which they later identified as being, you know, a specific lifeguard tower that they believed was about 46 miles away. They were looking at it. It was like, maybe a mile, 2 miles. It was weirdly magnified. The whole coastline was very strangely magnified, so they could see it as if it was up close. And I'm speculating that this has something to do with the sighting, obviously, or perhaps a weird sort of time-space is being folded there, or I don't know. It's a very rare detail that I've only heard a few times in, you know, other cases, not in this area, but, you know, in general. So it's very strange. And after, you know, the sighting stopped, after these objects suddenly left and then these big bright lights blinked out, they looked back at the coastline and it was distant again, like normal, and you couldn't see the cars. So I don't even know how to explain that. It's a crazy sighting.
Yeah, that sounds crazy. Do I believe that these people are seeing this stuff? Yes, I do. My special guest tonight is UFO researcher and author Preston Dennett. And I will have more for you when we return right after this. All right, we are back, and my special guest tonight is Preston Dennett, and we are discussing his book titled Undersea UFO Base. You can pick it up on Amazon. Preston, I want to ask you if, you know, I know you know this, but if you can just give us some kind of, if you can give us some idea where these underwater bases are thought to be.
Yeah, that's, the million-dollar question. You know, I started researching this in earnest back in 2006, following, you know, I published a book called UFOs Over California and devoted a chapter to underwater UFOs because there were so many right here off the coast, and decided I was going to publicize the book by excerpting that chapter, and I started doing more research into it. And I wrote this article for Fate magazine called "Is There an Undersea UFO Base Off the Southern California Coast?" And I'm guessing it's somewhere in this area because there are so many sightings in this particular stretch of water. You know, it's not like this on the east coast of the United States or the Gulf of Mexico, not in Northern California or Oregon or really anywhere. I know Costa Rica, for some reason I always get those mixed up. They have a lot of USO sightings as well. And there's other areas that do have a lot of USO sightings. Could be bases there. But I'm guessing there's a base somewhere in the Santa Catalina, San Pedro Channel. And what I did was I sort of put all these USO and UFO sightings in this area on a map, on a, you know, and I totally put it on this grid to sort of see, you know, is there any pattern? And they were mostly clustered, you know, between Catalina Island and the mainland, towards the Malibu area, slightly towards the north end. And it was about 2014, 2012, when a researcher, Robert Stanley, one of the early researchers in this area, noticed this unusual formation underwater. And he kind of put a little arrow on it and remarked about it on the internet and on his website. And a couple of years later, you know, another researcher used Google applications and explored this anomaly. It's now known as the Malibu Anomaly. It's about 7 miles off the Malibu coast, and it's this huge artificial looking like structure. It looks artificial, at least at first glance. It's got this real flat top. It's got what looks like giant columns or pillars. And most intriguing to me is what appears to be a tunnel in some of these Google images. And so I'm thinking, this is it. You know, wow. Exactly where I thought, you know, this base would be. Here's this anomaly. So that could very well be it. Now, this has gotten an enormous amount of publicity. These images, which you can look up, you know, online. I have one in the book, went viral. People just went nuts over this and were speculating. And of course, the debunkers and the skeptics came, you know, crashing in to debunk this thing. I'm kind of on the fence about it because there are some Google images that don't show a tunnel at all. It appears to be just a normal landslide. Mm-hmm. And if you examine the pillars, they're not very uniform. And they, not super impressive in terms of, you know, being artificially constructed. Now, the flat top does look unusual. No matter which way you slice it, it's very flat. And, you know, Rob Lowe, the actor, he had a show called Location, where he'd go explore Bigfoot and ghosts, and actually did an episode on this anomaly. And they were able to send down a submersible, a little unmanned sub, to go examine this thing closely. And it was very, you know, kind of shoestring budget. They were just down there for a very short time and didn't do a thorough investigation by any means. But did go to reach to the bottom, you know, the top of this thing, and it did show a very flat surface, no evidence of artificial construction. They couldn't really find the tunnel, you know, but ultimately they concluded that there was no evidence of artificial construction. And this is what geologists have said, and a number of skeptics, and certainly the military in the area, have denied anything like this.
Okay.
But I have to tell you, I mean, the images that show a tunnel intrigue me because I had a number of whistleblowers contact me and say, yeah, there is a tunnel in this area. And this was well before these images came out. And I don't see how you can choose the images on, you know, Google Earth that don't show a tunnel and say that's the truth any more than you can pick the ones that say that do show a tunnel and say, you know, that's the truth. So, yeah, I'm on the fence about it. But even if that turns out to be natural, it still could be used as a base, or the base could very well be somewhere else. It's somewhere in that area. Number of people, they told me they think it's under Catalina Island. But gosh, you know, I think there's something in this area because I've got a number of data points pointing towards, you know, the possibility of this base.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you your thoughts on this. Now, I have heard it one other time before about a possibility of a base being located in the Marianas Trench. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't. Nothing that's, you know, really, you know, super convinced me. But it wouldn't surprise me because that is so deep. That's the deepest place in our ocean. Our oceans are still not fully explored in terms of all the caves down there and all the there's lots of places we can't quite reach. We're just now getting the technology to do that. And I'm guessing if we do find this stuff, you and I are not going to hear about it. It'll be covered up. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least if there's a number of bases, because, you know, that's not news, really. I mean, in terms of UFO bases on Earth, this has been speculated about for a pretty long time. UFO bases on the moon, in space. To me, it makes perfect sense that there would be bases underwater because we can't get to it. It's the perfect place for them to hide, and they have the technology, the ETs, to do this. So it wouldn't surprise me a bit if there are multiple bases around our planet.
Okay, let's talk about the ETs. What types of ETs have people been reporting that are inside these USOs and these underwater bases?
Pretty much exactly, corresponds exactly to UFOs and the research I've done, you know, with just normal UFOs. And it's three or four main types. There's the grays, well known. I don't really need to go into the description too much, but, you know, 3 to 5 feet, large eyes, gray skin, bald, huge heads. That's probably most common. Also praying mantis, in terms of, you know, going into the base itself. It's funny, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people who say they've been abducted or taken or had a so-called onboard experience. And pretty much when, you know, I'm talking to someone, I can sort of predict a number of the things they're going to say, or their descriptions of what the inside of a UFO looks like, or what happens to them. It follows a pretty close pattern in most cases. It's not perfectly set. Everyone always has unique features to theirs. But there's a number of cases in this area where people have told me, you know, yeah, I was taken, but it wasn't into a UFO. It was into an underground area. And one gentleman, as an example, he's a doctor and a pilot, great witness. I've known him for years and years. He had a missing time experience as a child on Catalina Island, in the harbor there, in Avalon Harbor, and years later went under hypnosis, hypnotic regression, to sort of recall what happened during this missing time event. Didn't see a UFO, just had, you know, regular missing time that he could not account for, but later had UFO sightings and, you know, kind of linked it to this phenomena. And under hypnosis, he recalled being taken to a vast underground cavern, or chamber is how he described it. And he said it had rock walls. It had a very smooth floor, but the walls themselves were rocks, rock-like, not smooth. He was put on a bench. It was his friend, who was also taken, appears to have been the target. And his friend was, you know, taken to another area, and he doesn't know what happened to him. But the type of ET he saw were more accurately described as not grays, but praying mantis, or insectoid is how he said, but as he described it, I realized he was describing praying mantis type, which is considerably taller, usually 6 to 9 feet. He described it closer to 6 feet. Very, very large eyes, tall, you know, stick-like limbs, and he said it was wearing this kind of like a jacket or a cloak or something, a little white sort of poncho around his shoulders, and he said it wasn't a scary experience for him. You know, he had really no fear at all, and it was a very brief experience. But yeah, he was taken into this underground area. And another lady, a photographer who lives along Malibu, same thing. Said she was taken to this very vast underground. She described it looking like an auditorium. Another lady, she had an out-of-body experience. She's had a lot of these sort of out-of-body experiences, and she had one where she went into this undersea base in this area. And she described gray type ETs. As did this photographer. She said there was gray types and there was human looking. I've got a number of cases involving human looking ETs in this area as well, or close to human. Odd looking, certainly, but, you know, human enough to pass on the streets without, you know, raising too much of an alarm. So those are the three main types. Certainly in my own research, it's mostly grays, then praying mantis, then the Nordics or the human lookings. But there are others. There's, you know, weird humanoids, light beings, and things like this, some uniquely described beings. But by and large, it's mostly grays.
Okay, Preston, I've really enjoyed talking to you tonight. Before we go, I want to give you an opportunity to tell my listeners anything else you're working on and where they can find more information about you and your books.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, if you want more information about this book or any of my books, I do have a website. If you just Google my name, it should take you there. The actual address is prestondennett.weebly.com. And I've got all my books there, excerpts. You can contact me through my website. I'd love to hear from people, whether they've got a question or a comment or a story to share. Always enjoy hearing from people. And my books are available as well on Amazon and other online retailers and in bookstores. And always working on new projects, K-Town, always. I've got another book coming out later this year, if all goes well. It's going to continue the series that I'm writing. It's called Not From Here, and they're sort of about the more unusual aspects of UFOs. I'm also putting out a new edition of my book, my first book, actually, UFO Healings. The first book, published in 1996, covered 100 cases of people who've been healed as a result of a UFO encounter, physically healed of everything from colds to cancer. Got 100 more cases at least. So that's what I'm mostly looking into right now, and I'm so excited. Oh, gosh, the stuff I'm finding out.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to have you back here. Many blessings to you, Preston, and I appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on the show. I had a blast. Thanks very much.
All right, that's going to do it for this one. I've really enjoyed this conversation with Preston. Remember, you can pick up his books on Amazon.com. Preston talks about more than just UFOs. He talks about strange creatures as well. And I will have him back on the show. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town. You guys have a great night, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.